Thank you very much. On the most depressing day of the year, the third Monday of January, I might as well give you that. This is called Hot Cotter. The morning of my first Holy Communion, I asked my mammy how they made shirts, how they got the collars hard, why there was another button inside. Then I asked my granny, but she didn't know either. That's not our job, she said. We women wash, dry, iron, hang them on our men. Your grandfather low. Girls in shirt factories are poor girls, he says, who didn't do good at school. They're not married. They think of men by one sews, one collars, another puts the buttons on. They imagine film star men in their shirts, he supposed. Keeps them going, the boredom, you know. When I grew up, I wanted to go with a girl from a shirt factory. A shirt factory girl wouldn't expect as much as a college girl would. But there was no factory in our town, so my wife-to-be works in the ball-bearing factory. She's here now in Clancy's with me, getting my wedding shirt and one for the going-away outfit.
Yellow. Do you pick up the yellow in my dress?
She says.
Nice for the photos.
She says, and kisses me. I can't wait for her to unbutton me. And for the rest of my life, I can think no more of girls in short factories.
Next up, we have Kevin.
Some preamble to this poem to say, and Michael's poetry earlier kind of put a stop to all that. So it's short and sweet. It's not actually my poem, it's plagiarised. It's a conversation with my sister, and she said this particular lines, and it's like, you know, you remember that song from the early 80s, late 70s, but her being 5 or 6 years older than me, I didn't remember it at all, but the words stuck. So it's very relevant to contemporary Ireland compared to when it was first written in the late 70s, early 80s. On the dole, digging a hole for an ESB pole.
Next up tonight we have John McGrath.
If I look familiar,
this is the one you wrote for the fireboard challenge.
Yeah. I'm from County Mayo as well. We live close to each other in North Kerry, Mike and myself. And I spent quite a few years in England and Scotland and America, and came back in 2000 and settled in North Kerry. And our youngest son is married to a girl from Krakow in Poland, and we got to visit there in the new year. And as we waited for the plane back, it struck me that there were certain commonalities between what I was witnessing at Krakow Airport and what I saw half a century ago on the boat train to Delirium, things like that. This is Krakow Airport, January 2014. I joined the Ryanair line at Krakow Airport. The Dublin flight is late, but no one seems to mind. More time for tears and long goodbyes. Leggy girls in leopard skin and leather cling to dark-clad mothers. Grim-faced boys and solemn men shake heads. Shake hands. There are cans of tisky beer and bitter comfort now. I stand in line, remembering a queue from 50 years ago. Scuffed suitcases, sad-eyed men in suits of crumpled blue, red-eyed girls in headscarves shuffling towards the Princess Maud, converted cattle boat, seasickness, porter and a stink of piss, then Holyhead and dubious future, filled with home and homesickness in equal measure. Here in Krakow, boarding has begun. I watch as sons forget their macho stance, embrace their mothers, fathers look away. Brothers, sisters, husbands, wives and sweethearts, their homecoming behind them once again, turn towards their future and gate 3. Thank you.
Ah, great.
And now we have Charles Clark.
Many of you were here last week. I read a book, I read a poem about imaginary speech from Demosthenes in England. Now I've repatriated my muse, and this is Demosthenes in Dublin. It became increasingly hard to practice tar, bird watchers, beer drinkers, surfboarders who complained of brown trout. His early morning appointment was very wee. In surging oceanic green and fleshy red, Vestra bottled on the Delacroix in Marion Square, he rarely excited comment. Incredibly, I will be myself, he would mutter between lunch and puddles. In the land of oratory, he excited passionate response in questing sequence.
And now we have Nick Flanagan.
I was going to read a poem about boat journey I took when I was a kid, sent back to my grandparents, but after all the talk of immigration, I think I had a futuristic ticket to a time long ago in London, in a pot full of immigrants. So I'll do a funny one, a happy poem on divorce. Where did it all go wrong? Over 50, overweight, overdrawn, over here. Looks in the mirror, some old geezer stares back. Can't believe what I see, but at least 3 mirrors have given me the same reflection. No wonder hurricanes are given women's names. When they go, they take the house, the car, the boat, the kids, the dog. God, I'll miss the dog. And though Sue, the dog, and I didn't leave on the best of terms, I'll always be fond of him, her, because as she sunk her teeth into my arm, I knew she meant me so no harm. And I realised that she was a he. I don't blame Sue, egged on by my ex and the Johnny Cash CD played over and over again. And as I sit reflecting on my reflection, someone asks, new shoes, pointing to the box in front of me. My life, I say. What, the person says, your wife, the ashes? No, I shake my head ruefully. But the thought makes me smile. And the song, I can see clearly now the rain has gone, starts playing in my head. And the old geezer in the glass winks and smiles at me.
And next up we have Cathal O'Donovan.
Hey.
Thank you.
I really fucking hate fucking public fucking speaking. This feeling of graffiti can't be fucked up any second, only fucking getting worked up, filling sentences with stutters, turning words to verbal clutter, fucking mumbling, cawing, bleating. I really fucking hate fucking public fucking speaking. I really fucking hate fucking orating to a crowd. I hate it now, this fucking sound unfurling across the fucking room. I feel it echo loosely to each fucking ear, while each eye staring. I really feel this fucking silence until it fucking surrounds. I really fucking hate fucking orating to a crowd. I really fucking hate this fucking audible abyss in this room's hiss and every breath shuffle and sniff. You're in my mind while in your seats with every and we're both listening so intensely. Unless I forget or forgive the simple final question glaring, would you care what I'm fucking saying if I wasn't fucking swearing?
Patricia Wolf.
I was treated in all day. It's called Atalan. Dense at the expense of local glory, cracks but gull in disrepair. With extremely hazardous to swallow the kiss, what of your alcoholic joy did not belong to you, nor was it stolen from me. Why would I want to meditate, temporarily vanquish all my thoughts, when I can no longer think of you? I am no more than an intruder, placing folly on the breast of love from the treasure. I want to get to know you more, for you to become the size of my enemy, so that I can vanquish you both and mock the meat I feed upon. Love, what does it mean to you when you opened your diary to me? What do you like? What am I like? Am I so stupid to think that I deserve for love from anyone? Don't leave me to humiliate myself any longer if you don't feel the same. But if so, thank you for your cooperation.
And next up we have Bridget.
This is called Tiger. It's the most luring, most expensive forest in Russia. The globe shakes, and there you lie in snow, your eyes winged with ice, and blue guttering lips full of smoke. And I have cracked my teeth on chattering sips, and flung our trinkets into groaning lakes, and followed hints of wood smoke, whilst blind in a squall, and hummed peculiar strains to muffle familiar ache, and all to reach you in this place, where toes and hands are chewed of hearths, and yours grown black I clamp in caves, and... thanks. Oh.
Sleep when the door opened and she silently sprinkled holy water on our beds, but we were dead safe with the magazines under the pillows and the scapulars round our necks, miraculous medals stitched onto the horsehair mattresses, repulsing the man with the hooves that we were terrified would visit before our next confession. If we had known of garlic then, they would have been hammered to the window ledge. Those scary nights were warmed by hot water bottles, by hot watered Bulmer bottles, tightly corked by orange washers and Grandad's heavy RAC overcoat. Once a week, when putting the sheets through the wringer in the backyard, she consoled herself that the holy water had done the real cleansing.
Now we have
Conor McMahon.
Thanks, Scott. This is a short story. Keeping on a religious theme, it's bishops do this. James Shannon was dosed up to the eyeballs with Disprin and brandy. The hip was at him, and it was to the pin of his collar wallpapering the front room off a beer crate. He said it was the softy faced Buck of the Glancys that pulled a chair out from under him at a wedding. I knew who he was talking about, and I was laughing at the expression. Then he said he was a real hay dog, and it was a low act, the lowest of the low, to pull a chair out from under a man, and him just about to sit into the dinner. I had mixed the paste in a basin, and James let me cut round the light switch with a razor blade. I thought it was a good job and was pleased with myself. There was no gap, well, none worth talking about anyway. But he made a thing about coming over and inspecting it and said, "What's a quarter of an inch in a big country like America?" The Bishop of Darwin, Australia, was arriving early next morning, and everything had to be 100. Cubby holes and glory holes were cleaned and scrubbed that hadn't been cleaned and scrubbed since the last visit. The whole house was freshly painted inside and out. I loved the smell of fresh paint. The presses in the kitchen were newly glossed, and all that was left was to screw the handles back on the press doors. Outside, the sheds were whitewashed and the yards newly tarmacked. The place was immaculate. The captain said, "It's as neat as a robin's nest." Now all that was left to finish was the bishop's bedroom. James had to hang a couple of more strips. I had to run down to Mars for another packet of paste before closing. I knew if the captain had his way, he'd just mix up a concoction of flour and water. He had no time for the packet paste. My mother was down after being up with Lily getting her hair done. It was all go. The Bishop of Darwin, Australia, came every 4 years to visit the Pope and dropped in en route dispensing rosary beads. The house was full of rosary beads and koala bears. If you went looking for anything on the tops of wardrobes or under beds, you were sure to come across a koala bear taking up the place. The bishop spent his time in the good room reading his office and trying to arrange masses for himself to say, if Father Degnan would let him. That's why my mother said she didn't know what all the tarmacking was about. For not one out he'd ever stir. She wanted the inside finished. And she didn't care one whit if he never arrived, bishop or no bishop. All she wanted was the handles back and her press doors. James was manoeuvring round the bed when I got back from Mars. He had the last strip cut and left folded and ready for pasting. When I had the paste mixed, he hung it and slipped it to get it to line up perfectly with the half yellow flour in the other strip, and then brushed it in well. He worked his way down the wall, brushing and rubbing hard and furiously as he went from the middle to the sides to make sure there were no bubbles. It was perfect. The captain had a cure for the bubbles. He'd get a syringe out of Dr. Loftus and inject water into them and re-stick them, and you'd never know the difference. When James was below halfway, he got off the crate and let the last fold fall. It was about a foot short, however he cut it. He stood back and looked at it, and I chanced to say, "What's a quarter of an inch?" He looked at me and winked and said, "We'll push the bed in tight to the wall."
So next on the mic we have Colin Scully.
I did it again, got caught to come on after Conor. This is something I wrote today, and I don't think you should probably ever read something that you wrote the same day in public. But you should probably leave 24 hours past like, and let the sun rise on it. Anyway, I'll do it. Hopefully people empathise a little with this, I think, especially at this time of year. It's called Guilt Trip. Just came down from a sugar high, end of January. Christmas cake nearly gone. I'm hiding the butter at the back of the fridge. Only one coffee today. If I keep away from the nice things in the cupboard, maybe tomorrow I can break loose. Dairy milk, afternoon tea, black magic. I sip from my daddy cool mug. The media bombards me with messages about childhood obesity as I prepare a meal for three kids. The chicken tangs. It's out of date when I froze it. I feel I need something sweet. Tomorrow I will take a spoon of sugar in my coffee. I will chaw on a kiwi for lunch. I weighed myself yesterday in my shorts. Is that all scales lying? It never seems to change. My alcohol consumption over the weekend was reasonable. 4 large-ish glasses of wine. But I'm so pleased with myself for abstaining on Sunday, as Monday night poetry eats into my quota. I walked 5 metres with someone smoking the other day. I could feel the poisons gush into my lungs, flushing them out with the gulps of fresh air. I think it was easier being Catholic.
And now we have Cedric.
Well, that one was written today, actually. So, well, I wouldn't read it to myself, so I'm going to read it to you. It's called No Limelight for Silver. Following a shadow casting one, making the rest relevant, he is rewarded after the first one, maybe. Feeds on the leftover, scattered by the champion to be. The influence is real, the presence ignored. What would the world be without this minute difference outline? There would be no second. What we are not looking at is a man in a poor suit. He watches no one's back because he stares at it. Eyes on the prize is not his motto. That's his resume. He's made with the fabric of a winner, only to patch holes, it seems. He's the one after, feared by the one before, hated by the followers. He's the prophet who preaches a heaven he never reaches. Next time you are held witness of a race, please pay attention to him. He, the man who has no face. He who tries when his chances are claimed. He is the reason the world holds its pace.
Okay, we're coming to the last bit of the night. We have Michael Ray up next.
This is about the sun, the glass nest. An idea arrives like a grey corner in the November sky, and I'm lost in its arctic stillness, in the antiquity of water transmuting as it pulls itself hard across the lake. This is the time when stress fractures form from thoughts of you leaving, and I head out to the old house. Score and break windows. Not a shock of cracks, but a cutting through the history of light. I stack and shape long crooked splinters, a curved enclosure to trap your fading lucence in a crush of shards and crisscross making. There are similarities hanging from the eaves. I snap them off, but when I try to trap the hearth's flickerings, they run through the slow pain of my warming fingers. During the brittle months, I graft passing planets and endangered constellations to the jagged walls of my glass nest. These small incubations might shift our orbit just enough to bring you round. At the lake's edge, I persuade the last ribbons of light water to overwinter in my glass cocoon. When the long night comes and the shoreline's pebbled throat slides open, I keep it safe inside my jacket. I know the moon is a white cuckoo.
And now we have John McNally, I think. McNally or McNally?
McNally.
McNally.
Okay.
Some dose. I accidentally overdosed on Lemsip last week. I didn't follow the prescribed instructions. Forgot to count the hours between. Had one or two too many. Lying on the couch, my lulled gaze towards the cathedral across the road, peculiarly the steeple baffles began to baffle. Quivering gills, I stole to the window, duvet as a cloak, in time to see the steeple open up, bloom into six segments of weird fruit, from whence an acorn helicoptered up to the stars. I decided it was time to go to bed, however not before wondering what adventures would happen if we didn't follow the other directions in life. Take repayments once a month for 40 years, find one life partner, have 2.1 kids and a car or two. Always follow directions carefully. I wonder. And now we have Simon DC.
I was on an island that was 5 miles wide in the Gulf of Thailand, where it hadn't rained for a year, and there were boats sat in the ocean throughout the whole day delivering water to the island, and most of the taps hadn't worked for a long time, and the heat, for having been unbroken for so long, was strong and constant by day and by night. And this is a poem about what happened next. It is called What Came With The Word And Caused The Bare Bulbs To Blow. You turned your face to mine, and I felt too close to see, like a man standing under rain who tries to see the sky. And then I realized that there I was only allowed one aspect of you at a time, and so I chose lips that were dewy and plump from rest. And in the landscape of a furtive iris, no longer hidden by unconsciousness, my sight made bare and stripped of the blindness that had shrouded it till then. The lucid light poured in over curtains and through walls and lids like lost good found, and it reached far down into the depths of deep vast valleys, and it broke over earthed peaks, and it seemed to not cease as my eyes slowly closed. The near ocean quiet like an old man swayed, the jungle fizzed and hymned, the hot walls pierced ways, created stars that shone again with the day and its sun. But with what looked to be a light whiter than that within a star at night, a light so true that it seemed as if it had to be burning itself out, as if surely it had to be without the means to preserve a will to be so bright. Outside, under where the jungle's tall, column-straight, thick-trunked trees grew to palms, preserved by a wei-wu sway, weighted with clumps of green coconuts clinging to singing tips, moving like a cradle, rocking endlessly, a dispersed and hiding herd of stocky banana trees stood, trees whose leaves I could see without having to open my eyes, flapping like the ears of emerald elephants, out to where dried, brown, whole and blown open coconuts were strewn around the first of a short strand of multicolored grains of the earth's dead skin, where there coexisted pieces that from any distance more than the reach of a child's arm away made the unfractured yellow of a sunflower seed. Pieces that thickened and grew in size and coarseness at the edge that they seemed to create, sloped down to and then in and under the sea, reaching ceaselessly. As we slept, all around us, the night like a feather fell. As we slept, all around us, the night like a feather fell. As we slept, all around us, the night like a feather fell. When I awoke, near enough for me to hear their fall, waves crashed peacefully upon land. A light white wall dropped behind me as I sat down, having risen. Within the white, you slept, soundlessly. You looked like a memory there, a memory that a mind would give itself to not forget. The night sang outside as intending to lift my fingertips to my neck. I felt a pencil in my right hand and a notebook in my left that was entirely blank but for one word crowning an otherwise white page. The veiled light of the clouded and bare bulbs waned and then regrew. My eyes shut as I looked directly up. Leaves betrayed a restless sky. An unfamiliar tapping began. Light dinks made music. And then the weightless sounds within the sound became as quick as the sound of a bone or holy bread breaking. One man sang about another world and lovers' pearls and dark eyes and life and death. as another said that I could not go home again. But then your palm touched my skin, as stirring a world turned. Baptized, the light died, knowing that it would begin again. Skin stroked limbs, kissed lips, kissed. The word was, it rained.
Now we have Kieran McGuigan.
The Honest Trials of a Righteous Liar. Live a life for beauty, and sometime maybe, somewhere at some stage, someone might say, that moved me. And maybe the chimes of love and those rhymes falling from that stage gave no calling to deaf ears, suppressed by tight fears, who heard nothing more but the jingle of coins in your pocket as you took the mic from its socket and spoke from your core until your heart was raw and your soul was sore. And your tears were met with jeers and peers saying, I can take no more of the sound that silver makes when it reminds of all it takes, the blinding light, the shine awaits as you struggle to create a troubled strive and twisted fate. Honest men make mistakes, but look now how it permeates. One needed an apple, and so one grew a tree and put up a sign beside it saying, it wasn't me, and so parted ways with all responsibility. And in asking for forgiveness, that at least I couldn't see the sickness at the center of the man they made of me. For in every step that I take higher, more I become a righteous liar. Who was it taught me to assume that one and all must consume? Maybe it flashed before my eyes when I was awed by their disguise, like the gato little lies, saying, here's our goal, but here's your prize. We'll harvest your orchard while you sleepwalk to survive. Settle up with self-worth. We're all here to sympathize, enjoy your new birth. You'll be one of those happy guys, depicted on the TV as an ape in a cape. As it dictates your thought, tape after tape. This is what to long for, and this your preferred shape. And this is how you'll get there, do not deviate. Until well enough, knocked at your door, you only wanted just a little more. Is there a sale at the online store? Oh, I could work this little chore. I could put up with this bore. I could learn not to abhor that which provides comfort galore and keeps the wolf from the door and feeds the system that classifies your wisdom and creates subtle little schisms for you to look across and make you thankful that false gain was easier than hard loss, and sends you to the poetry to drink in a little culture as you sit there like a vulture ready to observe, waiting to be served with what you've long deserved. But regret warps the words, and it plays on your nerves, until you send the ignored with a look so bored to their lonely wooden tower, to wield their petty power, while the rest of you cower beneath a weight too great to ever appreciate the truth in what they state or the beauty they create. And what you could once see clearly has clouded as you've wearied, and your bitterness at this stops any subtle shift without faith in your own gifts, or energy enough for the fulfillment of your vision of a renewed, simpler system. A creative mind imprisoned, frustrated and reminded in every meeting eye to eye, beneath a blueing sky, in morning's offered handshake, the winks and gestures that we make, in every sharpened breath's intake, who else did we forsake? Until darkening night falls in the wake of another day, where between us we could muster little else but to say, surely, surely there must be another way.
Okay, so the last part of the evening is me. I was down in Dingle last month, and I'm from Dingle. I have to be asked by the bookshop to write a poem for their radio show about other voices. And this is that. I'm looking for it.
second, excuse me. Elevator music, please. Alright, here we go. Other voices. In the glacial garden of the goddess, girdled by the sea, where her rings and rats and holy pots speak of our history, you will find music in the mountains, where the water breathes slow airs, with a mystery about them, as if each leaf had love to spare. And that's where the tribes will gather, before their harvests on the hearth, their thirstless lake of heaven's sake, of music, wine and art, in an archetypal temple, where each song resurrects an angel, and they don't justify their travels, they just find the place they came to, where the voices burn like candles, in the chapel of St. James's, the notes they float like prayers to gods that hear and rearrange us, and in these holy moments, where the tabernacle glows, the past and future vanish, and the moment overflows, and then the final spinal shiver becomes the final note, so out into the winter night, and button up your coat, and then you're walking up the main street, with a pint of local brew, and if luck be with you, you might meet the king who calls the tunes. You see, you can't avoid the joy of everything that's going down, so drink one for the dolphin, other voices, Dingle Town.
Woo!
Hey, hey.
It's fantastic to see such a turnout, and it's been a wonderful evening. So thank you very much again to Micheál Delaray.